evening. Welcome to Employment Law Today. I'm your host, Eric Sauver. I'm an employment law and business law attorney, and I host this show every Tuesday night at 5 p.m. right here on Talk Radio NYC, where I have guests that talk about and discuss some of the most interesting, novel, and challenging issues that employers and business owners face today, particularly in light of the COVID-19 pandemic. And in that spirit, I'm very happy tonight, delighted to have as my guest a co-host from the station who has his own radio show, which I'll get to in a moment. And we're doing a two-part event. And his name, as you can see on the screen, is Frank R. Harrison. Frank, welcome to the show.
Hey. Hi, Eric. I'm glad to be here.
Great to have you on. I'm going to give a little bit of an introduction for you in a moment. But first, I want to just brief our audience tonight on the topic that we'll be discussing. And as I mentioned, this is a two-part event, whereas I'll be on Frank's show on Thursday at 5 p.m. on the same station, Talk Radio NYC, to discuss in more detail. So our topic for tonight is we are doing a show called Mental Health and Employment Law Post-COVID, and this is part one. And what Frank and I were discussing and want to share with you all this evening is that the COVID-19 pandemic has basically caused this collective and individual level of PTSD, of anxiety and depression. And it has exacerbated many mental health conditions, including for employees in the workforce. And with nearly 2 years now of working from home, quarantines, COVID-19 scares, and a polarized society, many employers are seeking mental health-based leave. They're seeking sick leave, as well as changes in accommodations from their employers. And so the questions become, how do the federal, state, and city employment laws protect employees with mental health conditions? What are those mental health conditions as we're seeing on the ground, so to speak? And equally important for business owners, what is your role? What's your legal and ethical role and obligation in accommodating mental illness among your workforce? The question becomes, can compliance with the laws help employers to regain a healthy and productive group of employees? And so tonight on my show, Frank Harrison will be our guest. We're going to shed light on this. And that, I think, Frank, brings me to my intro for you, why I think you're particularly qualified to talk on this matter tonight, if I may give you a proper introduction.
Perfect. I appreciate that.
Sure thing. So as I mentioned, folks, my guest this evening is Frank R. Harrison. Frank is the president of Health eMedia, LLC. He's also a mental health advocate and Talk Radio NYC host of the show, Frank About Health. Frank is a passionate entrepreneur who leverages personal experience to help others. He's a compassionate healthcare advocate who has made it his life's mission to empower and support those who are navigating life-altering health conditions, with his cadre of guests each having a related healthcare issue that they will share with Frank on his weekly podcast. Frank Harrison is also a seasoned professional with an extensive background and expertise who employs his past experiences in his business and social ventures for today. He's an NYU and Fordham University graduate with an MBA in business, an MA in psychology, and an MS in integrated marketing and social media. Frank has previously worked for powerhouse companies in the media, entertainment, and technology sectors. And he has more recently shifted his focus to the healthcare and hospitality industries, opting to pursue to erase the stigma and bring about awareness of healthcare topics that he deeply understands and has been personally involved with. Frank's public advocacy training with Cornell University during the pandemic has made Frank evolve his platform into a forthcoming live event and media platform with Health eMedia, Inc., in conjunction with Hilton Worldwide. So folks, as I mentioned, he is indeed a very diverse, interesting, and qualified guest tonight. And once again, Frank, it's really great to have you on the show this evening.
Well, it's my pleasure. I mean, essentially, I've been trying to tell this story in many different ways throughout my personal network of people, family, friends, obviously within my career background. And it's just very hard to describe in a nutshell as eloquently as you just did. I mean, essentially, I can be known as a person who wears a lot of hats. I can be known as someone who probably isn't focused, depending on who you speak to. But what's ironic is that everything that I have ever done or found myself evolved into has been a stepping stone along the way. I think ultimately, not the final destiny, but the destination of all of my experience and collaborations with various people is to create Healthy Media, which will hopefully go into full launch by mid-year 2022. You know, so it is basically a combination of my business background, as well as my psychology research experience, my awareness of a lot of healthcare issues. As everyone knows on my show, I come from the background of being an epileptic. That's how Frank About Health began. But simultaneously, lived through COVID, as we all have, I was able to put all of those hats on when needed. And actually, it just developed organically into a new business model that I hopefully will be able to launch with Hilton in the spring.
Interesting. It really is. You know, I often enjoy, I think, asking my guests, Frank, when they come on, basically, you know, share a little bit more about yourself and your background and what inspired you to become a mental health advocate. And I find that people often, their personal experiences combined with their educational background or the family, usually often personal experience, I think, can really shape someone's their passion and their role. So it's interesting to hear some of your background there that you just shared in terms of some of the, what led you to your current endeavors.
Well, essentially, since I graduated college, I found myself in very unique positions depending upon where I was employed. I went to the Stern School of Business as an undergrad, and got my first job at Citibank, where I was in the credit card operations department. But I was a DJ on the side as well. And that's what I preferred more than the other. One paid the bills and the other kept my spiritual life going. But the irony is that it was just a moment in time where, having recovered from epilepsy and having to live life with those challenges, I think that I was always weighing my professional decisions and options based on how I felt at the time. I always wanted to be in an environment that allowed me to connect to others, that allowed me to communicate effectively with others. And I think innately, I've always been a psychologist at heart. I always found myself always trying to help people, even when I was a teenager. So by that nature, if I was in a work environment that didn't make me feel those aspects of my personality, I found my way out. And then I evolved into something else. But of course, when you have experiences from the past, those skills remain with you. So I was able to integrate them into my next opportunity and my next opportunity, so forth and so on. So my personal experience, really, as to what made everything evolve for me, especially Frank About Health, was monitoring my health care on an ongoing basis. That's what you have to do when you have an ongoing neurological illness like epilepsy. Simultaneously, you know, I was living nearby my parents, who were getting older in years, and about 20 years into my career, my father came down with prostate cancer. You know, but at that time, well, thank God, he's been recovering nicely, and he has at the same time been an example of how COVID, or at least the vaccines, may have had a play in his recovery, but that, I guess, we can talk about a little later. Now, the thing is, also, I've noticed recently, I have a cousin who has had unfortunate circumstances with no adequate health insurance, no adequate caregiving support. So I became, through her, as her proxy at the NYU Langone Health System, I became her advocate based on eye surgeries that she just had, as well as based on upcoming treatments that are neurological in nature. And her son became her CDPAP worker. I'm sure you're familiar what CDPAP is about through the Medicaid system, correct?
I had some experience, with that. You want to tell share with our audience a little bit about that in case they're not in the know?
Sure. Without fully digressing, CDPAP is Consumer Directed Patient Assistance Program, which the Medicaid system had introduced about 2020, pre-pandemic, actually. And then it became more relevant, especially when you found the essential workers like the nursing home health care attendants and other individuals that would always be at the patient's home or in the nursing home, not being able to come to work, probably because they got COVID or they were trying to avoid COVID, among other reasons. So it allowed your caregiver to be your spouse or your child who was living with you at the time. Now, I don't live with my cousin, but her son does. So I was able to get him in the program. And then together, we collectively take care of my cousin's health, healthcare, actually, from soup to nuts, physical exam, laboratory testing, not to mention getting her COVID vaccines, among other things. Now, as I just gave you a brief example, from my own healthcare to my parents' healthcare to my cousin, that just became part of my everyday modus operandi. So right. How was I going to be able to, at the same time, continue my career, professional and career goals of being a psychologist? That was entertained for a while. Plus, I launched an entrepreneurial venture, which is now a little bit tabled until a later date, but it was about to be financed and about to launch until my own healthcare took over again. So what I find interesting is that I was kind of constantly distracted from my own professional goals by being involved in caregiving by default. So I decided in my creative way to try to integrate the two.
Right.
So that's a personal healthcare background that led me to where I am, where I'm going today.
It's interesting, Frank. It's like I've often seen how people's, personal experiences and trials and tribulations can make them more attuned with the needs of others, even people with different issues. Let's say they don't, for example, have epilepsy, but it kind of takes me to an interesting question I have for you, which is, it has now been 2 years since the COVID-19 pandemic began. So I'm wondering, as a mental health advocate, have you seen particular mental health conditions and mental illnesses become more widespread or more severe during COVID? And before you answer the question, as you know from being a host, like we are actually at our first commercial break in just a moment. Time flies when you have a detailed conversation. But I wanted you to get to that question, perhaps like after our break, since we don't want to break up the continuity and momentum. But I think it's like an interesting, segue, because you're talking about your own acute awareness of the system, and you know how it works with respect to your and your cousin's health. So the question becomes, like, what have you seen the pandemic? And folks, we're going to answer that question very shortly. For now, I'll just say I'm Eric Sauber, host of Employment Law Today. My guest tonight, Frank R. Harrison, host of Frank About Health. We're talking about employment law and health and mental health in light of the pandemic. So stick around. We'll be right back.
Are you a business owner? Do you want to be a business owner? Do you work with business owners? Hi, I'm Stephen Fry, your small and medium-sized business or SMB guy, and I'm the host of the new show, Always Friday. While I love to have fun on my show, we take those Friday feelings of freedom and clarity to discuss popular topics on the minds of SMBs today. Please join me and my various special guests on Friday at 11 a.m. on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a conscious co-creator? Are you on a quest to raise your vibration and your consciousness? I'm Sam Liebowitz, your conscious consultant, and on my show, The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, we will touch upon all these topics and more. Listen live at our new time on Thursdays at 12 noon Eastern Time. That's The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, Thursdays, 12 noon on talkradio.nyc.
Are you on edge? Hey, we live in challenging, edgy times, so let's lean in. I'm Sandra Bargeman, the host of The Edge of Every Day, which airs each Monday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time on talkradio.nyc. Tune in live with me and my friends and colleagues as we share stories and perspectives about pushing boundaries and exploring our rough edges. That's The Edge of Every Day on Mondays at 7 p.m. Eastern Time on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.
Welcome back to Employment Law Today. I'm your host, Eric Sauber, an employment law and business law attorney. Here tonight with my guest, Frank R. Harrison, Frank, founder of Health E Media, who's also a host and founder of Frank About Health, which airs Thursday at 5 p.m. on this station. And our conversation tonight, our topic is mental health and employment law post-COVID, part one. We're doing part two. I'll be a guest on Frank's show Thursday evening. So Frank, once again, really great to have you on the show this evening, I must say.
Mm-hmm. Same here. I'm glad to be here.
Excellent. So my second question for you has to do with the pandemic and mental health. And the question is, it's been, as I mentioned, 2 years since the pandemic started, believe it or not, but we're at that 2-year mark. And I'm wondering, as a mental health advocate, have you, Frank, seen particular mental health conditions and mental illness become more widespread or more severe during COVID?
Well, you have to look at it from the one fact that COVID-19 hasn't been here at all. There is no basis of that. We all know about the 1812 or the 1912 flu, the Spanish flu pandemic. I wasn't around during that time. In other words, there's no foundation for any of us who were already predisposed to any mental or comorbid physical ailments prior to the pandemic. All we had was the awareness up to that point. All of a sudden, a virus from Wuhan, China, migrates through Europe, lands in New York on March 1st, 2020, or actually lands in Washington State first around this time, and then March in New York. And the thing is nobody knew what to expect. Nobody knew how to identify it. Nobody knew how to test it. We didn't have vaccines. We didn't have masks. We didn't have PCP. We didn't have anything, no direction whatsoever. That kind of, from a student of psychology point of view, that kind of makes you resort to knowing your own resources to try to identify how are you going to live with this unknown disease, which is disruptive to everyone's way of life, whether it's your work, your school, just living at home with family, parties, travel, all of those things. So that being said, we all had to relearn what it was like to be thoughtful of that famous phrase, be true to yourself first before you can be true to others. The thing is that most people were never really brought up under that modality. They're all understanding that we all grow up in families. We all have our workplace friends and family. We all have our collective identities and groups and niches. But we never really take full ownership over ourselves. We kind of wait or anticipate that someone else or something else is going to guide you. And that just was not the case in 2020. So that being said, when I'm observing the mental health disparities that were accruing, I'm observing them on a day-by-day basis. There was no baseline to go from other than to understand what has developed over the last 2 years and to come up with new theories or new ways of thinking based on what we know and what we can foresee happening in the future, but have some temporary modality of treatment and protocol in order to live life with it. On an episode of Frank About Health, I had my guest Rita Gray talk about the Omicron variant about a month ago, actually. And the thing is, she had the disclaimer, I'm not a doctor, I'm just an actress. I say the same thing. I'm not a doctor, but I, by nature and by force of the circumstances surrounding my family and surrounding my business, I had to become one. And so therefore, I think what I'm trying to say on my show and even on this show tonight is that in order for everyone to be fully aware of what has changed, they have to be aware of themselves first. And so that's what I try to do every week on every episode of Frank About Health. I try to advocate for self-awareness and ownership over your mind and body. And there are a lot of people that are just not going to get it. They just won't. I'm not trying to please everybody, but I'm trying to awaken, you know, like Sam says on his show, awakening awareness. You know, I'm trying to awaken people to be mindful of what we are living with and therefore do the right things that are going to help us through the pandemic and post-COVID. Now, have I noticed a change in mental health relationships? Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Mental health disorders have run rampant from the areas of high depression, high anxiety, hypervigilance, PTSD, that is more collective in nature, but at the same time, individuals who already had it for various reasons, even more so. I was reading some statistics the other day that said that pre-pandemic, there were 50 million Americans that had some form of mental illness. They averaged at about 19.6% of the country. Right now, it's at 25.8%
in 2 years' time.
Right, exactly. Yep. And yet, what has not changed, along with the exacerbated mental illnesses that have gone on, are the treatment modalities, the appropriate medications, as well as some of the financing that insurance companies could be able to do to take care of patients who really need something of an ongoing treatment plan in order to deal with adjustment issues. You know, so the thing is, I think that number is still going to skyrocket, even when we're at a point when the pandemic is at a low and maybe a majority of the country has become vaccinated, or maybe the mutations that continue to develop won't be as severe or won't be as spreading the way that Omicron recently was. But the thing is that people are going to have lived the last 2 years in their mind as a big wildfire with no measurement of time and boundaries. And they probably would have, during that time, broken a lot of their relationships with friends or family or loved ones, or they would have quit their job, or they probably would just be no longer taking a simple phone call from a friend as something that they want to be bothered with. A lot of people are resisting. A lot of people want to be in their cocoon. They want to feel self-protected because all the media and news out there every day about something else related to COVID, it's too much to handle.
It's overload. Yeah. You said a few good things there, Frank, if I could just jump into kind of recap it, because I think it flows nicely into why it's such an epidemic of sorts. There's two epidemics, right? There's the pandemic itself and the actual COVID-19 illness, and then the way it wreaks havoc on people's mental health. And I think that can definitely segue into employment, but sticking with just that baseline, that sort of like, here's what's happening. Something you said really, I think, stuck out. One, I really heard that sort of like that, I guess, that ingredient, that brew or that stew of like worst ingredients that would just basically exacerbate all kinds of, I think, or be a breeding ground for more severe mental health issues, right? That constant unknown, the unpredictability, the sort of looming threat of imminent danger, combined with the fact that sort of those of us, like say, who might seek comfort through connection with others, many people, I think, were grieving losses, fearing their own mortality, and they had no one to gather with. Like when someone dies, you gather, you know, you sit shiva in the Jewish religion, I think we do other things, but yet people were grieving and even processing this far apart. And I think you were also mentioning like some people may try to self-protect in a protective cocoon. Interesting to see people's different reactions there, but that lack of a baseline that we didn't have, you know, none of us said, well, we've had other wars. This war is hard enough, but we look to history. How do we, you know, what did we do in the Spanish flu of, you know, a century ago? So I definitely hear those excellent points. And then to your point, the increase in anxiety, PTSD, individually and collectively, I think we all, it's like the perfect storm, so to speak. And I think it's good that we establish that, you know, because it does feed into questions of employment and, you know, you and I know the Great Resignation, there's a mental health component, there's a racial component. So just a lot there that let just chuck for rich information. And I think you laid it out nicely in terms of, you know, how you went about it there.
Well, the thing that I'm also trying to make clear is that, you know, we as human beings are wired for interconnectedness. It's just in our DNA. It's who we are. I mean, we are part of the animal kingdom, a higher level, but we are. And when you are literally forced to work from home, learn from home, do a telehealth visit, or even right now, this interview, which 5 years ago would have been in the same studio where we both have headsets on with a joint microphone. The point of the matter is we do not see or feel each other's body language in the same time. So there's a shield, there's some kind of psychic block between individuals relating with each other. And when you're supposed to go outside and wear a mask all the time, or you're supposed to make sure that you show your vaccination card, or you can't eat inside or even outside at a restaurant unless you have your vaccine card, you're basically like the equivalent of in a cage. You know, the whole in classical conditioning theory, the rat in the cage constantly on the wheel or looking for the cheese and not being able to find it. It just needs to a conditioned response of learned helplessness, which leads to depression. So the way that the COVID-19 pandemic has redefined us as human beings has attributed to the outgrowth and the mental health abuse that we've all had to deal with. Well, not abuse. I think I would have to say mental health outcomes that as a result need more heavy treatment even after this pandemic finally disappears. So what we're seeing is an evolution of a normal way of being in a society that is structured, but then the society is disrupted by an unknown virus. And right. then you have everybody doing these new rules day by day, week by week, month by month, and you're still making this change and that change. And then you get used to constantly changing that when there's normalcy, you don't know how to deal with it.
Right, like, that's another interesting point, yeah.
You know, so that stir craziness is something that is now learned. I used to call it cabin fever because we were locked up for 5 months back in 2020. But now in the last year, especially when the vaccines were going out, I would be like, I used to travel like 7 times a year for business. I think I've taken 3 flights in the last 5 years. You know, so it's interesting.
It really is. And, you know, it's like the mention of all the constant changes. There's constant change from the illness, from the virus of COVID-19. That leads to constant changes in the laws and what people can do, like employers, obviously employment laws are already seeing a lot of changes out there in terms of, like, say, you know, the private employee vaccine mandate or mask mandates or different laws around COVID leave and such. So you have a lot of that change. And then people are trying to cope with all this change, as you mentioned, that if things would have let up, how do you come down from that constant, like, adrenalized response of, like, now I got to change this. I have to, you know, we're not meant to be in that constant state of unknown flux and doing it apart. So I think it's interesting because, you know, mental health and mental health thing about it is it's in all of us, but we take our situations with us. Like when we as a society have an increase in anxiety, depression, and PTSD around the family, that affects when people go to work. And so, as I'll talk about on your show on Thursday, the laws need to be, I think, more flexible in how they define leave, like what's disability leave, what's, you know, PTSD related to COVID, which is a recognized condition under the employment laws for getting leave. So I want to come back and after our next commercial break, and really happy to have you here tonight, Frank. We're talking about mental health and employment law in the time of COVID, the interaction between the two. So folks, when you come back, we're going to talk about the decline in mental health that Frank discussed and how it contributes to the Great Resignation. So stick around. You're listening to Talk Radio NYC, Employment Law Today, your host, Eric Sauber, my guest, Frank Harrison. We'll be right back.
Howdy, I am Joseph Franklin McElroy, host of the new podcast, Gateway to the Smokies. It airs on talkradio.nyc every Tuesday night from 6 p.m. to 7. Every episode is dedicated to memorable experiences in the Great Smoky Mountains National Park and surrounding areas. This show features experts and locals who will expound upon the richness of culture, history, and adventure that awaits you in the Smokies. Tune in every Tuesday from 6 p.m. to 7 on talkradio.nyc.
Are you passionate about the conversation around racism? Hi, I'm Reverend Dr. TLC, host of the Dismantle Racism Show, which airs every Thursday at 11 a.m. Eastern on talkradio.nyc. Join me and my amazing guests as we discuss ways to uncover, dismantle, and eradicate racism. That's Thursdays at 11 o'clock a.m. on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a small business trying to navigate the COVID-19 related employment laws? Hello, I'm Eric Sauver, employment law business law attorney and host of the new radio show, Employment Law Today. On my show, we'll have guests to discuss the common employment law challenges business owners are facing during these trying times. Tune in on Tuesday evenings from 5 p.m. to 6 p.m. Eastern Time on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC at www.talkradio.nyc. Now broadcasting 24 hours a day.
welcome back to Employment Law Today. I'm your host, Eric Sauber. I'm an employment law business law attorney, as I mentioned, but I think it's important, particularly for this topic tonight. And my guest tonight on the show is Frank Harrison. Frank has his own show, Thursdays at 5 p.m., called Frank About Health, where he tackles issues of mental health advocacy and mental health awareness. And we're talking about, as for those joining us late, if you're joining halfway through, mental health and employment law in the time of COVID. And so I think, Frank, you know, we really, in the first half of the show, we laid out nicely, like, your background, like, what uniquely qualified you personally, professionally to address these issues. And then I think you laid out for us really, for those, again, tuning in late, the uptick, the increase in mental health illness, disability, mental health challenges from the pandemic, and the clear reasons why, which I think, you know, we don't always stop to think. I think a lot of us need to give ourselves a break. Like, as you pointed out, you know, we're kind of constantly on this sort of chaotic, this adrenaline rush. And it's not always a good one. It's not the adrenaline rush of a roller coaster ride at amusement park. It's the, oh my God, what's happening next kind of thing. And there's a new variant and people's plans are canceled. So I think it's great to have this. And I think it's a great segue into, like, you can't talk about mental health without at least confirming that it seeps into every part of life, including the workforce and the workplace. So I wanted to ask you about.
I just wanted to add to what you said, where
not only
have the incidences of mental health increased, especially if the individual was already predisposed to mental health illness, but because of the lack of connection, it has added to substance abuse. It has added to increased rates of suicidal ideation, and in some cases, actual committing of suicide. I mean, the thing is a lot of people are also reeling from what it's like to be disconnected for now going on 2 years. There's an empty psychological vacuum that when people actually abusing themselves with different, you know, drugs or alcoholic abuse or whatever other substances they might be taking, they're actually just trying to numb the pain. And then they end up, whether by accident or through planning, they end up killing themselves because they feel that if they can finally rest, you know. But then you were going to cross over into how it's affecting the workplace. And sure, I mean, it definitely has a place there too.
No, I think that's an excellent point. I think I had actually made a comment note to ask if there was an increase, from what I've read about, at least, in substance abuse and addiction and challenges people are facing. And I think it's a great point to raise just in general. And I think it also dovetails nicely into some of the disability leave that people might need. You know, you see EAP, employee assistance programs, like, set up around issues of mental health and even substance abuse. So I think it's an excellent point, and I'm glad you raised it. And I think, you know, we can talk about this maybe in the next question, which is, we've got this decline in mental health that we're clearly discussing tonight. And it's collective and individually, it's on a collective level. So Frank, I'm wondering, like, how do you think this mental health crisis, I'll say, has contributed to the great resignation from your perspective?
Well, first of all, I am correct. You see, being that I'm also not an attorney as you are, please, you know, tell me if I give you any misinformation and correct me right on the spot. Sure. But the great resignation is predominantly happening with people who were in the working class, with restaurant owners, or hotel hospitality workers, those individuals, or are we talking about also private sector?
I think I'm talking about both. Like, I think what I'm reading and seeing is that, like, it's actually people in, it could be people in white collar positions of, you know, marketing and media. It could be people in, say, large companies, but also certainly with hospitality. I see it as two levels. You've got the people with the essential workers, maybe they're more sort of laborers and such, and not so much like higher positions, but they are risking their lives. Could be the grocery worker, could be the hospitality, the busboy, and they're risking it for what? And their employers aren't maybe meeting them halfway. Then I see the upper class folks who are resigning, either they have the means to do so, or they're just, like, you know, they're just so burnt out from, you know, Zoom schooling their children at home and being cooped up with, you know, the third graders and fifth graders and whatever kids they might have. And they think their employers maybe aren't meeting their needs. Like, the employer is giving them a salary, but they need something else. That's just what I've been seeing. I've been having my finger on the pulse of this, but maybe I don't know if that helps you frame your analysis. Like,
it actually does. And the reason is because I have noticed, for example, my doctors who I see on a regular basis for various reasons, epilepsy obviously being one of them, they prefer telehealth over seeing me in person because they got used to it. I had an actual doctor that gave up his practice at NYU to go into private practice at home because 80% of his business was through remote. Simultaneously, I know of teachers who don't want to go back to school because they prefer the idea of being in their sweats and just doing whatever attendance rosters or whatever they need to do at home. Then there's the circumstances where, you know, I have a lawyer for Healthy Media who doesn't want to go back to the office, especially when Omicron broke out. So what I would have to say is that this great resignation is a contribution of the feelings of not being valued for the circumstance that they're going through. And therefore, they'd rather just quit the job than get the menial labor where they're probably getting more through unemployment. And when we were getting our stimulus packages last year, or the other aspect is that people are also just, if they're in a high position where they're partners in the law firm or whatever, they probably have, you know, a lot of savings to continue to work from home. So there's the burnout question there. So a lot of people basically because of the pandemic, regardless of their work status in their career, are finding the desire to resign based on the learned helplessness that I spoke of earlier, based on the fact that they got used to achieving different emotional benefits by working from home, and just in a situation where we have constant warnings that if I have to wear a mask in the office, I'd rather work from home. I don't want to be having problems breathing throughout the day, and I can see my clients virtually. You know, so it's a combination of burnout, learned helplessness, and just a desire to be themselves to recover from this runaway train.
I think that's really, I mean, burnout, like learned helplessness, and just that sort of desire for rest, I think is really, I think it hits it in a nutshell. It really sums up nicely. I think, you know, I've discussed this issue with people on my show, as you can imagine, being in employment law today, and we discussed pressing issues at the time. I've also discussed with people in my personal life. And what's fascinating is that I think there are a lot of contributing factors to the great resignation. People talk about economics and logistical factors of, oh, people can now find better, easier jobs across the country or world because everyone's remote. But I think the mental health piece is a big part of this. And I think, you know, as you mentioned, like learned helplessness, not feeling valued, that's a key thing. And I think a lot of people maybe weren't feeling that way before, but now with COVID, if they're getting pressured, let's say, like to go back too soon, let's say pre-vaccines, people were saying, well, I'll come back and just wear a mask. And people were thinking, or, you know, they're working at a grocery store, a restaurant, maybe they're feeling jeopardized, they're at risk, and they're not seeing their employers maybe respond, you know, as being sort of valuing them as a person. And I think that you're right about that. People, I've seen a lot of employees complain that their employers aren't properly taking into account how stressful their home life has become. So it's sort of, hey, you know, Shelly, why'd you miss that 3 o'clock meeting we had scheduled? You know, you missed one last week. And as well, I have, you know, two small children at home who are being Zoomed now homeschooling, and my child's daycare are closing, and my, you know, spouse is home too. And one of us got COVID, had to get a COVID test because we thought we were exposed. So there's just a lot going on. And I think like any employer that wants to keep their employees just needs to recognize that. I don't know if you agree. It's just recognize it, yeah.
Absolutely. But the problem, which is the conundrum in all of this, is that the inability to recognize it, recognizing what their employees need, is based on their inability to recognize what their own needs are when dealing with a pandemic. So as a result, they're just treating business as usual and not making the empathic changes that are necessary because they haven't taken the time to explore how the other person, the employee in this case, is feeling from how has this altered your life? How has this altered your work output because you're not in the same frame of mind that you once were in? That is where we're lacking the continual divide in being able to work together during the pandemic, because the thing is, as everyone is adjusting to the constant changes, the employers have to adjust accordingly. because we're all still human beings, no matter if we're employer or employee. We're all going to suffer from the same mental deficits over this pandemic, as well as comorbid illnesses that are sometimes invigorated by this, whether it's cancer, diabetes, heart failure, God knows what else. But the thing is that it is the lack of empathy that was induced by the pandemic that is preventing employers from adjusting to the needs of the employees, leading to this great resignation.
That's, I think, an interesting theory, Frank. Wow, just kind of taking that in. It's like
It's just a theory.
But isn't really in the end, all, a lot of our thoughts are kind of theories based on our beliefs, our observations, experiences. I think it's very accurate. I think that, and what I'm seeing with employers coming to me, they don't always know what their needs are for their own self-care, because as you mentioned, this is sort of a once-in-a-lifetime situation, folks. This is not, like we've all been through, tragically or collectively, we've seen mass shootings in our history. We've seen wars. I'm not minimizing those things, and they can be very traumatic, but we have some idea maybe of how to interact or work with these. And I think that this is just like people are trying to adapt, and then the laws change. So employers don't know what they need and don't know what their employees need. I think there's also a mentality of, if I can do this, you better do it too. But what I'm doing might look different than what someone else is doing. When, if you look behind the curtain, like what's in their life,
Well, yeah, I mean, the one statement that I have always said to my friends and family is that perception is everything. Now, perception is not fact. It is not the truth. But when it's collectively agreed upon in consensus, it becomes fact, right? Well, when you're dealing with constant change, all you have is perception. And everybody becomes collectively popularizing or polarizing a viewpoint about the pandemic or about the way people should be working or living or dealing with treatment. And it might be the wrong perception, but if everybody agrees, it completely misdirects everyone. So we lack the ground to walk on, which is why on my show, I tell people, well, I did an episode on Omicron, as I mentioned, live with this as a social disease. Live with the virus. Work with it. Don't look at it. No, I don't want to get it. Yes, you want to do all the precautions to prevent receiving the infection, but you have to work with, okay, you're setting up your own boundaries, but I'm a human being that have these boundaries that need to be worked with. So how do we collaborate together? That means everyone has to get a grip and be in touch with the fact that this is a real virus. And it has disrupted lives and livelihoods.
Yeah.
And the best way that the laws can adjust to it, employer laws, even government laws and regulations, are when they understand that this is something that can be collaborated with. This is actually an opportunity for all of us to be interconnected. But when everybody has learned for decades and years to remain me, myself, first and then the others, it only breeds narcissism, and then narcissism becomes the rampant indicator of it all, preventing a cure for this pandemic in a shorter amount of time, and we end up with something unlike, for example, wars, 9/11, a gun violence. Those are one-time events that ripple through months and whatever, but this is a life, not a lifelong, it is a two-year pandemic that is still with us.
Right.
Even if we're vaccinated and we're living life healthy, it's still with us. So we have to become aware of it and work with it.
I'd say one thing before our commercial break. It's like sometimes that feeling of the phrase COVID fatigue. There's that feeling that the light at the end of the tunnel is just not there. And I think people, I see a look of resignation on people's face. Resignation often associated with to quit, to give up, to just put down, And so I think, we have to take a commercial break. When we come back, we're going to hear from Frank about how he differs in his advocacy approach. I think we've heard a lot of that so far, but what's his approach to help people with mental health challenges? And what are the goals and missions of Frank About Health? So stick around, Talk Radio NYC. We'll be right back after this commercial break.
join us every Tuesday at 4 p.m. Eastern for The Mind Behind Leadership, where we focus on what leadership really means to us and to others. We have practical discussions with the CEOs of some of the world's largest companies, owners of small businesses, and experts in psychology and behavior to get that inside track, what to do, what to avoid, and what really happens. Join me, Graham Dobbin, at the new time, 4 p.m. every Tuesday for The Mind Behind Leadership here live on talkradio.nyc.
Hey, everybody, it's Tommy D, the nonprofit sector connector, coming at you from my attic. Each week here on talkradio.nyc, I host the program Philanthropy in Focus. Nonprofits impact us each and every day, and it's my focus to help them amplify their message and tell their story. Listen each week at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time until 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time right here on talkradio.nyc.
Calling all pet lovers.
Pet Avengers, assemble!
On the Professionals and Animal Lovers show, we believe the bond between animal lovers is incredibly strong. It mirrors that bond between pets and their owners. Through this program, we come together to learn, educate, and advocate.
Join us live every Wednesday at 2 p.m. at talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC at www.talkradio.nyc. Now broadcasting 24 hours a day.
Welcome back to Employment Law Today. I'm your host, Eric Slaver. Here tonight with my guest, Frank Harrison, president of Health eMedia LLC, mental health advocate, and Talk Radio NYC host, Frank About Health, which is also a platform in and of itself, and which kind of brings me to my next question for you, Frank, which is, you're giving our audience excellent, I think, primary mental health and just a lot of good information, good insights. And I'm wondering, how do you differ in your advocacy approach to helping those with mental health challenges? And what are some of the goals and missions of Frank About Health?
My differentiation of being a health advocate differs in just simply being myself. As everyone has already been aware, I'm not a medical professional. I'm not licensed to practice medicine. But I have a psychology degree with emphasis in neuropsych. And I did, as I mentioned, describe how I had to live with my parents during COVID in quarantine while watching my father go through rehabilitation from prostate cancer. When I got COVID, I had to hibernate from him to avoid him getting the disease and, God forbid, making it a fatal experience for him. So all of that living experience made me come back to Frank About Health, because I had been on the network before focused on epilepsy. But I talked to Sam Leibowitz, about coming back on this new Zoom platform to basically advocate COVID-19 or help to advocate for people how to live with it from all of the mandates and laws that were going on at the time. But then also to talk about other illnesses, because mental health is driving a lot of the other illnesses that we're seeing. And especially when the Omicron variant came, we noticed it was a mild illness, and those people that were being hospitalized were hospitalized for a different reason, not because of COVID-19. Yeah. So the thing is that I always went about advocating it by making my listener and my viewer advocate for themselves, stand up and deal with the reality, wake up to it as much as you can, hopefully with a good support network of family and friends, to be able to make people go out there and use the hypervigilance creatively, getting the knowledge, getting the resources, getting the information to try to live with this disease among other diseases. So on my show on Thursday, when you're my guest, you're going to meet one of such individuals who's been on my show as well, Dr. Phyllis Quinlan, who also is a professional nurse, and she works with an organization called Share the Care, which is involved in caregiving advocacy and caregiving support groups for patients who are pretty much either in special housing units or possibly in nursing homes. But at the same time, there are other people that when you have only your resources and not your licenses or degrees, the way that you use advocacy is through self-reflection and providing self-experience and providing transparency that most people are just not getting. So my differentiation approach is just being transparent. That's why I call the show Frank, being frank about health. That's where we are.
Yeah.
So it differs because we don't see that in traditional media today. We just don't.
Right. I think that's very true, Frank. Yeah. I think you're right about that. I think it's that, you know, that I hear that phrase self-empowerment and you help people to help themselves. And then I also hear you talk about them having a good support group and network. So I guess what I'm hearing is like a balanced approach where it's what I'm hearing correctly is self-empowerment, but not dysfunctional, like overly self-reliant to the point where one like isolates from help, you know, out of fear of asking for help. So it's like that like balance, I guess, right? Of getting support, but also taking the steps you can take, right?
Yes, exactly. Work with your doctor as a colleague in the efforts to maintain your health, not as the person who tells you what to do, you know, not to be dependent on them.
Right.
You know, work with your doctor, your family member, your own knowledge base, also whatever treatments you go through, if you do alternative treatments, if you do exercise regimens, you know what, and also try to get some clarity, especially with your perception. Like I said, without a foundation, which I think it'll still be a while before all of us collectively have a strong foundation and what life will be like post-pandemic, I think that you need your army, I call it cadre, but you need your army of lawyers and your army of doctors and your army of other allies to bring the reality in place when it comes to your mental health.
That's right.
I think one thing I was asked when I did an episode, a tribute to Betty White, who had passed a month ago yesterday. I was there with Rita Gray again, who worked with her. And we were talking about how just dealing with her, whether it was in a professional situation or a social situation, she brought a sense of self-awareness that most people, I think, are just either not in touch with or probably is, for lack of a better phrase, asleep half the time. But when she wakes you up with her presence, you know, that's an example that I think I subliminally role modeled from, because my interactions with her were strong enough to make me realize that working for other companies wasn't just going to be doable for me that much anymore. It would be where those companies would work with me, you know, like a partnership. And that's, you know, I was working for Hilton Hotels in 2016. But when I left them, I wanted them to become my partner in Healthy Media. And so far, that seems like it may happen because they did something, which is where I've advocated. During the pandemic, they turned their New York City hotels into essential worker suites because of the burnout, because of not wanting to go home to their families after seeing 200 patients, whether they died right there or whether they were you know, carrying the virus. They were a healthcare worker living quarters, you know, and so they looked at Healthy Media as a way of reflection to keep their brand integrity while at the same time thinking of their employees' needs, thinking of their tourists' needs, thinking of their management team's needs. So that's why I think it's a perfect fit for the partnership going forward. I gave you that in a nutshell, but I think what you'll discover when you're on the show on Thursday is that you'll be able to see the medical point of view from someone like Phyllis, you know, I mean, because that also addressed the big resignation issue, especially for the healthcare worker. You would probably find a lot of that after they had to deal with all of the numbers of mortality rates that have been crazy over the last 2 years.
Absolutely, Frank, absolutely. I look forward to that, including being on the show with Phyllis as well. And it's great to hear your perspective. Quick question, we're wrapping up. The part one will be a part two on Thursday. Our audience tonight, they love what you said. They're really like, wow, this is really powerful, great stuff. How do they get in touch with you? What's your contact info? What do you want to leave us with tonight?
Sure. Well, they can get me at my Gmail account, frankabouthealth102@gmail.com. They can look at my website, www.frankrharrison.com. They can also look at my other website, health-e-media.com. They'll actually see an interview I did with Hilton Hotels during the pandemic. And they'll find me on my social media as well. But if they want to speak to me directly, frankabouthealth102@gmail.com is the best resource.
Got it. I think it's really a lot there. You know, I'm really happy for you for that kind of reassessing and working in partnership with others, especially Hilton. I give them credit if they're watching, listening tonight, for what they did with the essential workers. That's, I think, really spot on. Knowing what people need, knowing what's really important. So that's really, that's, you know, great stuff to hear. And so for those listening tonight, if you like the show, we're going to continue this conversation on Thursday. I'll be appearing on Frank's show, Frank About Health, right here on Talk Radio NYC at 5 p.m. to 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. So same time, 2 days from now. So continue this great conversation. Frank, I want to thank you so much for being on with us tonight. And I'll let everyone know, if you enjoyed the show, stick around. We have some great shows on the station. Joseph Franklin McElroy is up next at 6 p.m. We've got lots of great shows throughout the week. We've got Always Friday. We've got shows about animals, animal lovers, with Tommy DeVisa and Valerie. So again, just want to let you know that you're listening to and watching Employment Law Today. I'm your host, Eric Sauber, employment law attorney. My guest tonight, Frank Harrison, and wishing everyone a happy, healthy, safe evening. So thank you, Frank. Pleasure having you on tonight.
My pleasure, too. And happy Chinese New Year to you tigers out there.
Yes, happy Chinese New Year, indeed. And really, yeah, just great information, people to really recognize. And I think we are right at our time. So perfect timing tonight. And stay tuned and tune in next week at 5 p.m. Okay.
All righty.
Thank you.
Take care. See you Thursday.
NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.
Are you a business owner? Do you want to be a business owner? Do you work with business owners? Hi, I'm Stephen Fry, your small and medium-sized business or SMB guy, and I'm the host of the new show, Always Friday. While I love to have fun on my show, we take those Friday feelings of freedom and clarity to discuss popular topics on the minds of SMBs today. Please join me and my various special guests on Friday at 11 a.m. on talkradio.nyc.
Are you on edge? Hey, we live in challenging, edgy times, so let's lean in. I'm Sandra Bargeman, the host of The Edge of Every Day, which airs each Monday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time on talkradio.nyc. Tune in live with me and my friends and colleagues as we share stories and perspectives about pushing boundaries and exploring our rough edges. That's The Edge of Every Day on Mondays at 7 p.m. Eastern Time on talkradio.nyc.
Informed about menopause and how it impacts on your life? Hi, I'm Pat Duckworth, women's health strategist and host of the Hot Women Rock radio show, Empowering Women Leaders at Menopause. Join me every Thursday at 10 a.m. Eastern Time, 3 p.m. UK time on talkradio.nyc for interviews with inspirational women who will share their top tips to rock your world.
In a post-COVID world, you may have many unanswered questions regarding your health. Are you looking to live a healthier lifestyle? Do you have a desire to learn more about mental health and enhance your quality of life? Or do you just want to participate in self-understanding and awareness? I'm Frank R. Harrison, host of Frank About Health, and each Thursday, I will tackle these questions and work to enlighten you. Tune in every Thursday at 5 p.m. on talkradio.nyc, and I will be Frank About Health to advocate for all of us.
McElroy, host of the new podcast, Gateway to the Smokies. It airs on talkradio.nyc every Tuesday night from 6 p.m. to 7. Every episode is dedicated to memorable experiences in the Great Smoky Mountains National Park and surrounding areas. This show features experts and locals who will expound upon the richness of culture, history, and adventure that awaits you in the Smokies. Tune in every Tuesday from 6 p.m. to 7 on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.